You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the Indiana Pacers 5 days a week. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East with the West Indianapolis Community News. And on the other line, my co-host, Adam Friedman. Adam, what's up, man?
Oh, not much. You sent me a picture that we made the top 17 list of indie podcasts in Indie Star.
Pretty cool. We did.
So if we have new listeners out there, there's that. I know it said we are not daily, I guess.
Five days a week is what we actually are.
Yeah, so we're not. I mean, I think people have noticed now if it's a podcast regularly, we do five episodes a week, not always consecutively, just because scheduling and the games aren't. Sometimes there's like a dry spell of 2 days of games and it doesn't make any sense to do a podcast.
Last week there were two games. This week there's four, so it was tough. But there's a lot to talk about with the Pacers. They just played their first game without Oladipo. Tyreke Evans' brother apparently hates Tyreke's role with the team. But the big thing to start with is the news. I don't have the tweet in front of me. I wish I did. But Charlie Clifford at Wish TV says a source said he saw Carmelo Anthony eating dinner in Indianapolis. Carmelo currently under contract with the Bulls on a minimum deal, although the Bulls do not intend to keep him after the trade deadline. Adam, what do you think about Carmelo Anthony being an Indy?
Well, first of all, it was a rumor of a rumor of a rumor. So I heard a friend say that it's 7 ways of Kevin Bacon. That's like almost what this is like.
Yeah, the nature of the tweet having like an emoji and not no specifics makes me agree with you.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing where Charlie's a pretty, I guess I would say he's a pretty reputable sports reporter in the area where like tweeting that, I guess he was trying to make a joke maybe, but like, I don't know, he's got a pretty good like credibility in the area. I don't know if I would have tweeted that unless he actually believes he was here.
Exactly. So he probably was here. I wonder where he was or who he was with. The Warriors are in town today. Gosh, we're recording Sunday. Sorry, I just cheered myself up. The Warriors are in town today. I'm sure Melo's tight with all the stars on the Warriors, so maybe he's here to see those guys. Chicago to Indy's not that far. Adam, like you said before the show, Melo's, I'm sure, pretty well invested in the area or in the world because he has a lot of money. Maybe he's got some business, something going on here. I don't know. It makes no sense considering they just talked about converting Edmund Sumner's deal for the last roster spot that he would even sign Melo. So I'm not really sure what to do.
They're not going to sign Melo if they trade some guys and clear up roster spots.
Wait, what? Are you saying they would if they did that?
No, not they would, but that's the only way they would get him. Like they have to clear up, they have to trade two guys for one to have a roster spot because he's not
right. Right. And they would, I don't think they would do that.
Well, I think even if they had a roster spot, they would give it to him. They did that. Yes. So.
Yeah. So I would not read into this too much besides just Melo is in Indy. That is all.
Maybe he wanted some good shrimp cocktail. I'm assuming that's in Emeralds. That's where they sell them.
Yes. I'll give him credit for that. There is a good shrimp cocktail in Indy if that's what he was after.
Yeah. You know, that's in like fish from a landlocked city.
So the other small thing, Tyreke Evans' brother, Doc. So the backstory here, Tyreke Evans grew up, raised basically by his brothers. They started like the Team Evans stuff. They helped him train all the way up. He tweeted, how long are the Pacers going to continue to play Tyreke Evans wrong? This is beyond me. I only mention the backstory here because I feel like the Evans family is really tight and Tyreke and his brother are communicating. So that is something to monitor, but I don't think it's even a story at this point. It's just something that is happening.
So what is wrong? I'm confused. Is wrong
actually,
letting...
I can give you more here. Don't worry.
Okay. Well, I was going to make a joke about how, you know, it's wrong letting Evans just go to the rim and throw the ball at it. I mean, that's what he's been doing right now.
Actually, last night's game does have some validity. He said, sits him for almost the entire fourth quarter and expect him to do what? So he was frustrated that he didn't play the fourth quarter. But one of his replies recently said, Tyreke got them back into the game, and then Nate sits him till 3 minutes left in the fourth. So I will say that Tyreke was in the game and they had a good stretch to catch up, but I don't know if that was necessarily from him or anything. Like he wasn't doing anything so great that got them back in the game, but he was in the game when that run happened and he was not in the game when the game got away. So
there's like a couple of things kind of going here too. One, I think Emil made the same problem with Turner where he played Sabonis to like 3 minutes and Sabonis just got the last 2 minutes. I mean, he either gassed because he played some minutes, right? Which just got destroyed by Gasol. And this was kind of extended. They cut it to four and then that happened with Sabonis. I think a three to Gasol and Gasol backed him down for another play, something like that. And that kind of lost in the game essentially. But I think with Evans, I don't think McMillan trusts him yet. I think this has been the pretty obvious thing from the start. McMillan doesn't. He has certain guys he trusts, and he doesn't trust Evans. And now he's going to probably have to trust Evans more. So I think it's just – it's about – I don't know. I mean, at some point he's going to have to either say we have to play Evans more to win games or we're just going to lose games if they keep losing at least.
To a degree, I don't know if this is necessarily accurate, but, like, if you want to speak in generalities, I think McMillan was thinking down the, in the fourth quarter of last night's game, which you were at, so you would also know some of this too, that he was like, okay, we need offense. You know, we're losing. We are struggling to score. We need offense. That's why Sabonis, I think, played so much. That's why Collison was in for a longer time in that fourth quarter, even though Holiday had a pretty good defensive game. Stuff like that, I think it was in generalities, but Turner's offense was more effective in that particular matchup. So that's my take on the Sabonis-Turner thing, is that they had Sabonis out there due to the notion that they felt like they needed offense, even though he might not have been the right guy.
I think, you know, I understand what he was doing. I think Sabonis was gassed by that point. I think
he just played Sabonis too many minutes. He rarely plays over 30 minutes.
Yeah, you just played too many minutes in a row. And I think there was actually one point in the fourth quarter where the league, they made like a 10-point lead, the Grizzlies did. And it was like probably 8-7 minutes left. And Thad got up from the bench to go into the game, or at least tell him that I want to go back in. And Milton kind of waved him off because he was, I think part of him too is like, we have to ride this bench and see what happens, because that's kind of like our new reality, where if we don't let our bench guys figure it out, then we're never going to have any shot winning any games this season, the rest of the season. Because there's something to saying that you have to just play the guys who haven't played together some to get some kind of chemistry or stuff like that. And I think
I agree.
You know, this was a game where like, losing it stinks, but it doesn't ruin your season. It's almost expected. You know, nobody expects you to come and, you know, hit a team in the mouth after your best player goes down for the season.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Like Tyreek's not a part of that bench anymore that you just talked about, which is why maybe he wasn't in down some of the stretch of that game. But also, like, you need to find rhythm with the guys you're going to be playing with now. And I think you saw some, like, the very first possession of last night's game of the Pacers was so bad. Like, no one knew where to be.
The first, like, eight were. You could see them trying to direct Evans in the entire time.
Yeah.
It almost like they didn't practice with him like that. And it just seemed like very off.
And they have to get used to the whole, like, new lineups thing. So the bench has to get used to what Holiday's going to do. The starters have to get used to what Evans is going to do. So maybe there's some forcing of that going on. But that's still important. You know, I think that laying that foundation is important.
Yeah, I think Evan's biggest problem still is that he doesn't pass out of the double teams at a well enough yet. You know, the way Oladipo had started to do it really well, where he would, like, Oladipo would get trapped a lot and he would get rid of the ball. And it started to, you know, you saw with the system just kind of creeping up since his injury return, where Evan still has this like, I'm just going to go to the rim and try to score. And he's just not that good at it all the time. You know, he's not that good at it, just kind of.
Evan has been better at scoring since Christmas, but he is not the best creator for others like he was at the beginning of the year. So
no,
that can come back for him.
He's not a guy who you just want barreling towards the rim to lay it in. Like, he's taking weird over the head layups.
He can't finish at the basket.
Yeah. I mean, Oladipo, when he was before this injury spell, could finish at the basket, where you'd be like, triple team Oladipo, he might still score. But Evans is like throwing up shots over his head. He's basically trying to do what James Harden does, but doesn't have quite the same skill set as James Harden.
Yeah. You know, his brother might have some validity in this specific instance where he didn't play a lot after he was in for a comeback, but I don't necessarily think that they are doing any wrongdoing to him at this point in time.
No, and McMillan's going to have to figure out, because he needs Evans now. I mean, the only way this team is going to be successful is they need Evans to play well. So he's going to have to find how to put Evans in the right situation where he can succeed, where McMillan's job has been so much also got really easier the last 2 years, because all of a sudden he had this guy in Oladipo who wasn't demanding the ball, wasn't really selfish, but he had a guy who could really almost do anything on the court, and he just kind of figured out, okay, well, he can get to the rim anytime he wants, boom, we'll just pick and rolls for him all day. Oh, he can hit his pull-up threes, boom, we'll let him take a bunch of those. Like, you didn't have to really, like, you know, this is really going to show the coaching job at Millen, I guess, is can he kind of build a decent offense against guys who aren't as skilled as Oladipo?
Yeah, it's going to be very fascinating. You know, I think we're talking enough about the game that we should just pivot to that being our focus now, because, you know, the week that we do the weekly show to talk about the week that was and then kind of look at the week ahead. Well, the week that was, we talked about ad nauseum last week. You know, it's the Oladipo injury in this Memphis game. And now I think the Memphis game is the big thing to talk about, unless you have other stuff that you want to bring up. But yeah, I'm with you that changing, you know, now you don't have Oladipo to do all this stuff. You're going to have to find new ways to do stuff. Like, I felt like Darren Collison handled the ball a ton last night, and I felt like he actually played a pretty great game overall. But, you know, that's the, like, the first easy part or obvious part of that change for me was how often he, you know, was taking it up the floor and running the first action, whether it be, you know, off a pick, dribbling the ball or throwing it to whoever's coming off a screen on the wing. You know, he just did a lot more of that stuff than he usually does.
So what's the Pacers' best offensive play now? Than Oladipo. I've said before it was
player or play?
Play, like actual like action they run.
Like through. An action or a set? Because that's a very
I'm guessing just like
they have many sets.
Yeah, give me their best set, I guess.
Their individual best set is that play they run the first play of the game where Bojan comes off the double screen from the back wing and Turner just fires it down to him under the basket.
But is that still there now? Because I feel like, Bojan didn't have it all there. Didn't have
it was
a lot
the first
of
play of the third quarter last night, actually.
Okay. I do feel like Oladipo, because the way Bojan succeeds is Oladipo kind of drawing the defensive attention, and now Bojan is kind of getting more of the defensive.
So they have like – like their best set for Evans is that little wrinkle they have now where, you know, Evans will throw it to the other guard and then immediately come off a screen from that guard and Sabonis, and then the other guard just flips it back to him. They started it with Corey Joseph and Sabonis, but last night they ran it with DC. It was pretty good. He missed the shot, but it was a good look. You know, they have like sets for good guys. I think their number one, like best individual thing right now, though, it's probably like a Darren Collison, Miles Turner pick and pop.
That's what I was thinking. I think that's their best play now.
Who was it that wrote about like they had a film session together where they just talked about getting the ball, you know, into the best scenario? Those two guys, and it works. They have very good chemistry. I think Collison's the best at getting the ball to Turner in the positions where he can be effective.
Well, and I think my biggest problem in the game was that Turner has an opportunity to just sort of be the offensive focal point, because he's going to be athletically better than most centers he goes up against.
Yep.
He just, like, you know, we haven't seen it yet, but, like, Turner put the ball on the ground and went for that huge dunk. Like, he's got the ability.
He had that nasty crossover pull-up jumper, too.
Yeah. There's things where Turner has been almost kept, I would say, like, hidden away because you aren't sure he's great at it. But now that they are kind of at this point where it doesn't matter, he's going to have opportunities to kind of, like, show off some of his offensive game. And Turner, you know, even against Gasol, who's a pretty good defender, he's just more athletic. He can do things that Gasol can't, as Gasol's, what it's called, 33 now, at his age. So, and he's going to have that advantage most nights. I mean, there are just not a lot of great centers in the league that can guard, who have the speed Turner has, I guess, and kind of like almost wire athleticism that he has, in a sense.
Yeah, he kind of can, you know, I just talked
about it. He's not 100% great at it, but if he keeps trying it, maybe the more he does it, gets better at it too.
Well, no, I think he can be a really, really good play finisher. He just can't really create for himself so much that you can just like throw him the ball and be like, go do stuff, you know, in the same way you can with Sabonis.
I think if you set him up on the pick and pop and get him kind of some space to him in the center, he can start making plays.
Yes, I agree with that.
And most of the centers in the league are not like Turner. I mean, there aren't a lot of stretch five centers. I mean, even I'd say, what, who's the best center in the NBA right now? Embiid?
Embiid or Jokic or AD.
Yeah. So Jokic might be the only guy has some of the same skill. He's obviously better at Turner in terms of like passing everything, but has that kind of like, but he can kind of like do it. I think Turner might be able to do athletically, but he's not a good defender. And Embiid's a good defender, but I'm not sure he's a good perimeter defender.
Right. So. Yeah, exactly. And Turner did show, I mean, seven shots in the second half, I think that's good. I think seven shots and a half is where Turner should land.
I think seven threes is good, too.
I think seven threes is very good. I agree with that. Only three shots in the first half, which I thought was pretty disappointing.
Foul trouble. That was a big issue. He took three threes, and then he got two fouls.
He had two fouls really early, which was a big part of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the issue with Turner. If he's going to be an offensive focal point, he's got to stay out of foul trouble.
And here's another thing. I get why, you know, if you're like, you know, more traditional, you would be frustrated about the threes, but they were all good looks. All seven of them were good looks. And 43% from three, you cannot complain about that.
No, we were talking about it before the podcast. And it's like his problem was he would get these open threes where he would kind of hesitate. And his biggest thing is he needs to just get the ball and shoot, because you watch all three of the threes he made, they were all kind of like in rhythm and not just kind of just like, oh, I'm going to pull up.
Right.
Kind of thing. Like he hit – there was one really good three where he hit where I can't remember made the pass to him, but he got this perfect pass just across the court. I think it was from Collison. And he just nailed it. I mean, you could just tell the way I knew the minute he got the ball and pulled up, like nothing's going in. I mean, you could just, it was all in rhythm. It was coming off clean. Where like a couple of the early on threes, he kind of just was standing there wide open because he got open somehow. And he just kind of was like, oh, I guess I should shoot, which is always Turner's issue where it's like, he needs to just be aggressive and assertive. That's his biggest problem. And he can do it. We've seen him do it. He's just got to just remember.
His last made three was at 0.6 seconds left off the dribble.
Yeah. He had two threes at the end of the game that were just like, I would say he was what? One, he was falling back. The other one, he was like, I think he just kind of caught it off at the top of the key.
It was so frustrating to see them finally start to make every shot they took at the end of the game. I was like, where's this been the whole time?
Well, I know. And their 3-point percentage was, I mean, I think they were 4 of 22 and they finished 9 of 27. Yeah. But they were, that is, they shot 20% the entire night.
Well, that's what I was going to say is neither, if we got to this point, neither team's 3-point percentage was indicative of how they shot, because the Grizzlies made a bunch of threes, like Bruno Caboclo and Gasol and Kindly all hit an insane three in the last 3 minutes. And then the Pacers hit every three they took down the stretch too. Like, both teams shot really bad from three until the very end of the game.
Yeah, I will say the Pacers did a good job getting the line.
Very good job. 36.
I mean, that's got to be a season high or close to it, free throws. I don't think I've ever seen them that high.
I can look for you while you continue to talk about how important that is.
I mean, that's going to be the key now that you don't have Oladipo, kind of a guy, like, is getting easy points. You know, I think it had to be at least in two of the quarters where he's gotten five fouls pretty early, and that there's one where Bowen, I think, shot four free throws back-to-back, and that cut the lead at one point from, like, 8-4 in the snap of a finger. I mean, you know, they've got good free throw shooters most of the time. I mean, you're looking at Bojan and Collison are probably – should be high 80s. I don't know what Collison, he was almost 90 last year. Like, those are good. Young is not the best free throw shooter. Thaddeus is not the best, but
nope.
Those two guys, Turner's pretty good. I don't know what Evan's numbers are this year in terms of free throws, but I assume they're not terrible.
In the 70s, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so, like, that's going to be kind of a key to making up some of the points that Oladipo got with his efficiency, is just shooting more free throws.
Get to the line, yep.
For any of them. So, let's see. Like, Holiday's an 89% so far. McDermott is 88. Bojan is 80. Bojan and Collison are tied at the exact same percentage of 82.4. So, you know, those guys shooting a lot of free throws is always a good sign, you know, and that's, they're like almost, it's like 3 points. I mean, it's easy. You don't have to worry about, you know, for a while the pitcher couldn't get in the rim and couldn't get a layup to fall half the time, or couldn't get anything, or just taking too many threes. Like, get up your line and get those easy ones. That's the kind of the whole key to winning a lot of these games.
You talked about misses. I'm going to get to that in a second. 36 attempts, tied for their season high. They also had that against Phoenix earlier this month when they had 131 points. So to be clear here, they've had five games with 30 or more attempts, and they're actually 2-3 in those games.
Isn't that crazy? Wow. That's weird.
Yeah. But in two of them, in the two wins, they had 129 and 131. You get easy points usually.
Well, and the kind of thing you have to do when your shots aren't falling. I mean, tonight nothing was really going in, it felt like, for a good portion of the game.
So there you go. There was my other one. I was ready to tweet this stat, which it didn't end up manifesting because the Pacers hit, like we just said, every freaking shot in the last 2 minutes of the game, finally, after missing the whole game. But Kobe Bryant in his 81-point game had 28 made shots himself. That's how many the Pacers had as a whole team with 2 minutes to go, was 28 makes. Like, they just missed a ton of shots.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Yeah, I mean,
and it kind of speaks to the insanity of Kobe's 81-point game.
Yeah, I guess
they just couldn't make anything, and it was crazy because I never, like, everybody was just kind of shooting like a little below average, but it was everybody, like everybody.
Yeah, no, I mean, let's see, Turner the best.
Holiday was bad.
No, look across the board. The only guy who was above 50 was, I guess, Evan and Collison, 3 of 5 and 4 of 7.
Yeah,
but like, Holiday 3 of 11, Sponis 3 of 7, Turner 5 of 10, Bojan 6 of 14, Thad 3 of 7. I mean, all these really just Joey Joseph 3 of 8. I mean,
a lot of blah.
Yeah, a lot of it. Just felt like it did feel like kind of one of those games where just like everything was off. You remember that Miami game a few years ago where they just couldn't make a three for, it felt like, the entire game, and they went 0 of 18 and like that, 1 of 19. Like, it just felt like one of those games. And part of it had to do with I wonder if there's some kind of like realization Oladipo was not coming back and they got to kind of get past it. But I mean, you do play bad once every, you know, 10, 15 games. It's just how it is. Like, no team can play great for 50 straight games. So,
yeah.
It happens.
And it was frustrating. Like, they'd cut the dent in the lead, and then Memphis would hit a tough shot. It just kept happening. So, it is what it is. This game speaks to the value of well-timed made shots.
Yeah. I felt like Gasol hit a lot of shots when it, like, they kill momentum a couple times.
They can just be so deflating for momentum that even beyond just being worth points, like, it just alters the game.
It also showed the glaring weakness of, like, when you've got two guys who are just like stars in the league and you don't know the team doesn't, it just, it's obvious. I mean,
the Grizzlies started two rookies, like, and the two stars just carried that starting.
Yeah, I mean, Conley is a really good NBA player, man.
Really? So is Gasol. Yeah. I used to be, like, not probably a season and a half ago before last season started, I was in Gasol's a top five center in the league.
I mean, Gasol's just aging out eventually.
Yeah, he fell out of it.
Conley's still in maybe the tail end of his prime. I don't know, but Conley's still really good.
He's very good. 22-11. He was killing everybody.
Yeah.
You want to move on to the week that is? I feel like So I feel like this Grizzlies game is so much of what last week was about, because we covered the Vic injury so much, and like you kind of have to move on.
So I was gonna say, so we're not gonna do trade corner, because it's not worth it. But should we take a break and then talk about Vic's Instagram post real fast?
Oh yeah, good idea. Let's take a quick break and talk about Oladipo's Instagram post. So Adam, after a long silence, silence is the wrong word there. After not being heard from besides like texts that he sent to other players and stuff, Victor Oladipo finally comes back onto social media to post a very long, heartfelt Instagram about, you know, his injury, his return. And the hashtag that we will all be using is now unbreakable.
I mean, the most telling thing about the whole thing was the months, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not like surprising, you know, like we know it's months already, but the fact that he talked about that he, you know, and the Indy Star article with that doctor and Tyreke Evans kind of spilling the beans. Did you read that as well?
No, I didn't actually read that one.
Caitlin tweeted about it if you want to go find it. But we did learn basically from Vic's Instagram and this article that he was playing through pain of some kind. And
wow, shocked. I'm shocked at them. I'm just shocked by that. You couldn't tell that. I mean, watching him play, I'm telling you, I'm shocked that like when you said he's not in, he's not hurt, that was, I mean, that was him kind of trying to talk himself into it.
I feel like I don't feel dumb, you know. Like I admitted that it was worth asking and stuff, but he just said it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he can say what he wants. It's not like he's required to tell you everything that's hurting about him.
Okay, I found the Indy Star article where Tyreke spoke about it too, but they were talking about getting knee treatment together. Basically, is what Tyreke was talking about. So he was getting treatment and had pain even after he was playing later on in the year.
The question really is here, should Oladipo have gotten surgery back in, what was it, November? We got her in November-December range?
No.
Are you
unless
sure?
It would have allowed him to play this year.
Well, if what's the injury would have put him out for 6 months, but would have guaranteed complete.
I don't know. It's hard to say what he's going to be after this.
You know, maybe because like this is the kind of injury that can like change your career versus like having minor knee surgery might actually not be the end of the world.
I found it. So Tyreke said, we talked about it. Oh, wait, when I refer to it, I mean knee treatment. When I refer to it here, it's Tyreke talking about having pain, playing through pain. So here it is. We talked about it. We get treatment on our knees a lot, Evan said. It's a big part of what we do. Putting a lot of load on your knee can sometimes bother your knee. Playing a lot of minutes, sometimes you just got to figure out how to manage your body. I try to tell him sometimes the days the knee hurt, I tell him to sit out. So clearly there was people telling Oladipo on the team that if it hurts, you shouldn't play, and he would still play.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I get the whole being tough thing, but I think if this could have been solved with like a minor procedure to put him out 6 to 8 months and would have said in November shot him back for the next season, yeah, it would have sucked and we would have all been annoyed, but it's better than what happened. So that's why.
I wonder if someone said that on the Glass Half Empty podcast.
Did someone say that? Did you say that?
I said it could be. I'm getting Kyrie vibes.
Oh, I gotcha. Well, that would have been better. Kyrie's injury wasn't that bad.
It was pretty bad. It's just
no, Kyrie was
it doesn't affect him long term. And that's the other thing. Like, I hate the ambiguity of it's no doctor's fault. Like, you know, it's just what they're saying of them being like, you know, he could come back to who he used to be, but he could also not. I'm like, no, I want to know. Like,
I guess the thing is this. I mean, is there any history of players doing this and like not coming back to play decently well?
Tony Parker and Charles Barkley are the guys that everyone is bringing up.
And both were fine. I mean, Parker was older, so it didn't matter. But like,
I can't really use TPs as a barometer. Yeah, because he was
how old was Barkley when he had it? I didn't remember.
I don't know. So Tony Parker just dropped off 6 minutes a game the next year, but they also
he was 35 years old. I mean,
he was 35 and they had Patty Mills. I don't know what year Charles Barkley had it. I only saw on Twitter that this even was a thing.
I mean, I heard a doctor say that it's about this. It's maybe a little worse than ACL. So like an ACL, most guys come back from nowadays.
Yeah.
I don't know if the timetable is the same. I don't. That's the real question is that a year kind of thing?
Right. If he can be back by the beginning of next year and only be like a tiny tick worse. And like, that's the other thing. what is it worse in comparison to, the all-star level he had or the level he had when he had the knee soreness? Because if he's just the guy he had when he had the soreness, like, you can work with that. That's a good player. That's an all-star.
I do wonder if he gets this thing fixed, he's going to actually not be in pain anymore, which is going to be a huge thing. I mean, this is the whole Andrew Luck thing, right? Like, yeah, it sucked that he was out for a year, but he was in pain. He played through pain, and now he has no pain, and that's game.
Look how good he is.
No pain. Yeah. When you have a guy that, when you're playing through pain for 3 or 4 months, and then that pain is completely gone when you play the next time. Yeah, you might have had to wait a year, but like that game, I mean, it'll take you maybe a month, two to get back to where you were. But if you're not playing in any more pain, you'll have as more confidence almost essentially. Like you'll feel better as long as you come back. And that's like probably that's probably the biggest thing with like when Hayward and George injured was like getting rid of the pain idea and just like thinking, oh, I'm no longer, I don't feel it. Like,
wow, I can run normally and it not hurt.
Yeah. Yeah, and I imagine this. People have surgery sometime this week, right? I mean, I haven't had it yet, right? They haven't announced when he had a surgery yet.
No, I don't think they have.
So I assume we'll have it this week.
Probably here afterwards anyway.
Yeah, but I imagine.
Probably hear that it was successful or whatever. Or
yeah, not. Hopefully.
You never hear the opposite, but yeah, exactly.
Knock on some wood that's not that successful. I mean, I don't know if you have. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, we'll see. I'm optimistic simply because he is going to only be 27 years old. So it's not like he is just entering his prime of his athleticism, and he's obviously works his butt off clearly by wanting to play through this pain. And hopefully, you know, maybe next year he'll have to do kind of the Kawhi thing where he doesn't play back to backs all the time and stuff like that. But
I like that.
If he's good and you get a good team around him, this year they proved they can survive without him in small stretches. Like, you know, if he plays 65, 70 games and not 82, and they go on another 17, they go 10-7, they'll be fine. They'll figure it out. I mean, you know, it's the idea of still trying to build around him is still there. It's not like it's just like gone because his injury, he didn't like snap his leg and we don't know if he's going to ever play again. This is like, he's going to play again. Just at what level?
Right. I'm with you. I want to do a statement about what just happened to me while you were talking and then do a transition into previewing the week's games. Charles Barkley has a thing on his Basketball Reference page where I tend to find his injury that says Hall of Fame inducted as a player in 2006. And I saw inducted and I read indicted just because I feel like every news article I read has indicted in the headline these days.
You're reading too much political news.
All right. With that, we will transition into we're not going to do the whole week because there's four games and we'll do another kind of weekly show on Thursday. Yes. But we'll do the first half of the week. So one more break and then we'll talk Warriors and Wizards. Adam, is this Warriors team any good?
You know, I've heard they only won 10 in a row, so I don't know. I mean,
they won 10 in a row. I didn't even know that.
I thought I just saw that they won 10 in a row. Could be wrong.
They have a lot of green bars. Their last loss was January 3rd.
Who'd they lose?
It was a 1-point loss to Houston.
That's right. That was like James Harden's, like, was that the beginning of his peak or middle? I don't know. It was like Harden was awesome.
Harden's peak. I'm glad the Pacers avoided the Harden.
So peak. The Warriors' last two losses, I think they've won. Let's see. They've
their last 12, two losses are by a combined 2 points.
Yeah, and then they have a bad loss to the Lakers, but that's it.
Yeah, they're really good.
So the worst thing for the Pacers right now is there's no nightlife because the last big play, almost every year the Warriors lose at Los Angeles to the Lakers because of the nightlife, because the guys don't get here. But that's the biggest thing, that there's no nightlife in Indiana. Maybe Carmelo to take them out. But
the only glimmer of hope you can have here. This is the Warriors' third road game in 5 days. So they traveled to Washington and then to Boston and then to here. So,
should we do their ratings? I mean, maybe their ratings. I've got them up. Let me rate them.
I also do, but you can go first. You'll be shocked by the second number, though.
They're first in offensive rating and 16th in defense. So maybe they aren't that good.
No, but the thing is, I think their defense with Draymond on is like number one, but off is really bad, and he missed a bunch of games.
Yeah, I'm sure they're fine. I mean, they've got two guys averaging almost – averaging over 28 points a game. I mean,
yeah, they are insane. But last year, then they played one of the games, a bunch of them were out, another one, some of them were out. I don't know. DeMarcus Cousins is back too, so now they're even better. Like,
so Curry is almost at 50, 45, 93. Yeah, they're going to have Kevin Durant is 50, 38, 90. They might have two 50, 40, 90 guys.
And you know what's funny is like early in the year, Klay Thompson, we were like, oh, Klay Thompson's struggling. He's up to 38% on almost 8 attempts from 3 a game. It's like,
oh God.
And Steph's set almost, a record this year.
Steph's almost taking 12 threes a game, which I know
is hard. We can just turn this whole segment into crazy Warrior stats.
So I guess they beat him both times last year, but then I don't think Steph played any of those games. I think Klay played one of them, if I remember right, and that was it.
Durant played neither. I'll look that up real quick. I want to make sure I have that right because I just tried to say a similar thing.
But yeah, so
there's last year's games are a bad barometer because they weren't a fully healthy
team.
Well, I wonder though if it's like because of the 3-5 and all traveling, if like Cousins wouldn't play. I mean, not like that would really matter.
Oh right, they have Blake Cousins now too. Well, okay, all right. So it's
By the way, they have one of the best five setters in the NBA back now.
I mean, so also another stat for the Warriors: they're first in effective field goal percentage in the NBA.
So, yeah, the first time these two – wait, is this the first second? Yeah, this is the first time. When they played in March in Indy, none of the four stars played. So the Warriors started Quinn Cook, Pat McCaw, Nick Young, Jordan Bell, and Zaza Pachulia. And they scored 81.
Great win.
Great. Hey, they
won. Truly, think about it. The two Warriors wins made up for the two losses to Atlanta Dallas over there.
So in Golden State, everybody but Steph played, actually. So they had Durant, Thompson, and Draymond for that game.
They played really good against Pacers. I think they held them to like 80 points.
What time?
The Pacers. What was the score of the second? The one in
126-106.
I thought they held them to like 90 points in one of the games.
81 was the first time.
Oh, okay. I thought that was in
Bojan was very good in he had 28 in Golden State. If you recall, I do remember this now. This is all coming back to me so fast.
So I'm guessing Darren Collison is going to have the best defensive matchup of the night.
God, guarding Steph just sounds impossible.
Like no, but I mean, like, on him personally. Like, think about it. Oh. Like, Kevin Durant's going to...
No. I think you put Boogie in a pick-and-roll every possession.
Oh, I guess he did start. So, yeah. So, Turner's have good.
Could have been good. Turner DC, though. Like, we just talked about that. You know, that's the thing to push now.
That's true. They can do that. I don't think that would be a nice little move.
I think that's how they can get some offense against this team. But the thing is, with Golden State, a lot of their good defense is that they have a set defense so much because they just make so many shots. So if you can force them to miss, which is hot, like an incredibly tall task, obviously.
Maybe this will be one of those days.
You can keep them in the game.
Maybe it'll just be one of those days where Steph goes like 0 of 14.
That would be...
Does that ever happen? I think it's ever happened. Has he ever not made
a... Does that ever happen?
He's taking 20 shots a game, man.
That's good. Yeah, he makes a lot of them.
Yeah, 45% of his threes, he takes 11 of them.
That's insane. He takes 12 threes a game. Is your butcher Curry or is your butcher Durant?
Curry.
Really?
Yeah.
I think you can go either way. It's a shame that the Pacers two worst defenders in their starting lineup.
I think Thad might guard Durant.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Especially Clay might have the best
actually
game.
I've been okay with Bogey guarding Draymond. Yeah, this is fine.
Well, no, who's guarding Clay?
Tyreek.
Oh yeah, that okay.
That's fine. That's also fine.
Yeah, I mean, you know what?
I can tell you're really confident.
Let's diverge off. Like, if you put Steph Curry on the Rockets, would he have the same stats as James Harden or better?
The similar. I mean,
if you gave Curry 23 shots a game, 13 from three, and you think he could put up 36 points a game? I think he could.
I think similar. Yeah.
Okay. I just – Harden's having a great season. I just like – I feel part of Harden's thing is his usage is so high, man. I guess could Curry sustain the way Harden is? That's a question.
It's hard to put the asterisk on what Harden's doing, though, because, like, it's so insane. And, like, you could say other guys could do it, but they don't have the situation, so.
So Curry's at 30.9 usage. Harden's at 40.5.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
I see the craziest thing while we're on this discussion? Like – Harden's last five games, he has 40-plus points, and not one of his baskets has been assisted or something insane. How is that possible?
So if you take Harden, I think let's take Harden's last eight games, it's 47.1 per game.
Oh, my God.
That's his last eight. If you go back to last 10, it's 45.1. Let's see, if we go back 15... It's 44.1.
What did the Pacers hold him to in their two games? Can we just tweet out, like, look how good the Pacers defense is? They held Harden to.
I think he had 30 a couple times.
50 total or something, right? They did okay. I mean, it was way before he went crazy, but.
Yeah. So bring it back to the Warriors game.
Warriors win.
Win by how much? 15, 20, 25?
Of all four, five. God, I was going to say of all four stars play, but they have five. I'll go with 15.
Okay. I think it's 20. I think we see a lot of TJ Leaf and Aaron Holiday.
Yeah, I think that there's going to be some garbage time here. Maybe we'll get to see Sumner, who actually had a good game against Houston in the preseason. Oh, that was Houston. I got Houston on the brain. It's Golden State. Maybe we'll see some Sumner, some Alize. I thought it was interesting. We didn't talk about this, but Nate said the thing about Sumner playing a little bit situationally, if it makes more sense than Holiday. That's, I don't know how I feel about that. I think I like that, but
I think you dump Leaf and just put Sumner in and play a lot of cards.
No, I'm not giving up on Leaf, man.
I'm giving
up. I know you want me to, but I'm not doing it.
Why are you not giving up on Leaf? He is not good.
He has shown some skill development this year that is important, and I think that is key.
Okay, but like towards what? Like, is he the eighth guy in a rotation? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, I can live with that.
I don't know if he's ever that. He's just not.
I am discouraged that his 3-point shot is gone.
I'm discouraged that he's still not athletically as up to par as some of the other NBA players.
You don't just like find athleticism like laying around.
I know, but that's part of being an NBA player.
Find a way to be effective around it, and that's what he's doing. He's like got better defensive positioning, and he doesn't
do. I just think he needs to go to a place where he can actually just play a lot and get in, just work through his stuff. And I think here he's just kind of like, you're just slowly getting better, but there's not enough time and enough minutes for him to actually get really good. Or get, you know,
not really never going to be like really that. Good. So if that's why you want to dump him, then that's a different story.
No. But I mean, like, to even get to like the probably rotation level, he's going to need to play a lot more minutes. And he's playing 9 minutes a game every like, and then he's not playing every for 5-game stretches here or there. So like, he's just not getting enough minutes to develop.
I bet he plays every game. I bet he plays almost every game or every game the rest of the season.
I will agree with that. I bet he does. How many minutes did he play against the Grizzlies? Like
8.
15? Oh, he played 8. God. So if he plays 9 minutes for 35 more games, that's probably still not enough minutes. Or he could go to Atlanta or something like that and play 20 minutes for the next, and, you know, he might actually develop.
I don't know.
They just don't have enough room for him to develop. There's not enough, you know, he's just kind of there, it feels like, at times because he's Sabonis and Kojo running it all.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not Leaf's fault. Some of this is just the situation he's put in. He kind of like had to be better than he actually was, and needed to go to a team he needed to develop with. You know, he needed to really be on a team where he could play a lot and just kind of work through all his flaws versus like just kind of waiting for a chance.
Right.
But
I don't know.
We digress from the Warriors game once again.
We digress because we just, it's not, what is there to talk about really? You know, it's like, they're going to lose.
Yeah, I know. It's unfortunate.
One of the best teams ever.
Can we move to a game they might win?
Yeah, I'll go. We both have Warriors by 10+.
Yeah, double digits at least.
Yeah, let's go to the always entertaining Washington Wizards. The Wizards, Adam, are 17th in offense and 24th in defense. And playing a little better without John Wall, which makes two seasons in a row where that is the case. This game for them is a back-to-back. They are traveling from Cleveland to back home to play the Pacers. So even though it is a road game, it might be closer to even in terms of advantages in that way.
I don't think the Wizards are very good, no matter what.
Markieff Morris has been out for a while with neck stiffness. Dwight Howard's probably going to be out. So a banged-up Wizards team on a back-to-back.
Yeah, they're not a good team, in my opinion.
They have a very, very good player in Bradley Beal.
True.
Very
true.
They have found that Otto Porter coming off the bench does some good stuff for them. Indiana University native Thomas Bryant is doing some good stuff for them. And other than that, I don't really know what they have going on well for them at the moment.
Yeah. They're not very deep, like you were saying before the show. They don't have a great roster. They have a really good player. They don't have a great roster built around him. I don't know. Are they well coached? I don't know. I can't really tell. They're just not a very good team. And the unfortunate part is if you had Oladipo, you'd probably win this game by 10 or 15. Without him, I don't know if it's even, if it's actually better because he'll take over.
Now the Wizards have the best player on the floor, so that does change it, yeah.
So then I guess the Pacers have the next, like, three. I mean, where does Porter fall?
Porter, well, Reese is pretty good too, but.
Yeah, but Reese and Porter are probably the same level, I guess.
No, I put Otto above Reese by a pretty good amount. Ariza's
I would say Ariza is playing a lot of minutes. That's a value.
Insane minutes, 38 minutes. And he's 33. Anyway,
that's valuable. I mean, it's kind of like the Thad minutes, where like Thad is kind of probably not as good as Turner, but he's played more minutes and can be on the court longer. Which is a huge.
You're right. They have the next probably three or four there.
Right, Turner's two, Sabonis three, and then Thad, Ariza, Porter fall in there together.
I'll agree with all those players and not the order.
I think Turner. I mean, Turner's probably the best Pacer player right now, or is that? I don't know.
So they have advantages in the post. I don't want to get into that right now.
That's fine. I understand that 100%.
They have advantages in the post in certain areas. Thad, for example, can guard anyone on that Wizards team. Turner can eat Bryant's lunch. Sabonis can eat whoever the bench big is for Washington's lunch. Mahimi doesn't even play sometimes now. Like, they have a very funky rotation going on. So they have advantages in areas that they can score some points and get this win. But they have to find a way to slow down Beal. I think that is the key for them in this game. I know it sounds so simple, like slow down the other team's best player, but it's pretty important this time.
So who's going to guard him?
I would guess Tyreek does.
That's the biggest issue. They don't have a good perimeter defender anymore.
Tyreek's a good perimeter defender.
Is he?
So is Thad Young. I think so.
I mean, Thad can guard guards, though. Thad can't guard Beal. He got on switch for a little bit.
No. Thad can guard guys about his size pretty well. Anyway.
Yeah. No, I mean, they don't have one of those guard defenders as well.
Right. I like Tyreek on D more than most people, though.
He's not. My problem with the game with Tyreek is just it's figuring out where he fits and how to, like, he's just off balance because he hasn't been playing with the starters very much.
The other challenge with Washington, if you want to talk on size too, is they're starting Satoransky, a point guard now, and he is huge for a point guard. He's like 6'7".
It's like, I don't think Collison is going to have that much trouble with him. He's not like Satoransky, he's going to just kill him.
Satoransky's a very good player, though. I'm a huge Satoransky fan for no reason other than the fact that I just really like his game and he's tall. But
he's as good as a guy who can shoot five times a game is, I guess.
Hey, five times a game is an appropriate NBA player.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not a starting level player. It's somewhere that falls between 6 and 8 on a rotation.
They're also starting Jeff Green, probably the most athletic player between the two teams. But Jeff Green's the kind of guy who could give Bojan some trouble just because.
Wow, you just insulted Edmund Sumner. That guy's quite the
athlete. Oh yeah, that's true. Wow.
This could be a game of Holiday too. I mean, the bench.
So the Wizards' last game, they played Orlando last night. As we're recording this, their bench was Otto Porter, Sam Decker, Jan Mahimi, and Chasten Randall. That's it. That's their whole bench that played. A lot of advantages there.
Who the hell is Chasten Randall? Didn't play last year in the NBA. I actually heard of this guy.
So the deal with Chasten Randall is at first they were like adding him and then waving him and then adding him and then waving him because they had to have 13 guys on the roster to not get fined, but they didn't want to have him for more days than they had to because of their tax bill. So they would just add him and wave. But then they ended up cutting someone else and keeping him for the rest of the year. So now they have Chasten Randall the rest of the year.
I will say the Pacers against the Wizards starters might lose by 4 or 5 points, but the bench should just have a field.
Yeah. I agree. They could
if you just put Mahimi in every kind of thing with Sabonis and Joseph, you should just win.
And the thing is too, like, they're on a back to back, right? And the way their rotation is now, where this Chasten Randall guy is their only bench guard, like Beal Green and Satoransky are all gonna play, and Ariza really are all gonna play just absurd minutes, right? So if they're on a back to back, that their fourth quarter, they're gonna be dead.
Yeah, Beal's really good though.
Beal is so good.
And he'll probably play a lot of minutes with the bench unit.
I think Beal should have started over Kemba in the All-Star game.
I agree with you 100%. The way he's played recently, too. Like,
maybe there's some reason. Maybe if those flip, like Beal starts off the season like this and then Kemba is playing now how he started off the year, we're thinking the other way around. So maybe there's some recency.
So since December, I think Beal's had like a really nice run. So it's 27.2 points per game, 6 rebounds, 6 assists essentially on 46, 37, 80 shooting.
He can be a lead ball handler. He's a great player.
Yeah, he'd be a great player next to Oladipo, too.
He would be pretty good. Unfortunately, the Wizards are asking.
I would ask the moon for him. I mean, Beal is one of the best. I would say Beal and Oladipo were neck and neck, them, like maybe Kyrie Hill had, like, in terms of best guards in the East.
I keep seeing things like the Wizards are asking too much for Beal. I'm like, no. They're asking exactly what they should be asking for.
No, but they're going to be in a good position once the Lakers get another star, and if they still have assets or Celtics or something like that, they're going to be in a position where, like, you want your third final piece? Give us everything you got for Bradley Beal.
Your youngies.
Like, let's say – I'm trying to think how this works. So, like, if the Celtics flip, Tatum for Davis essentially? So then they're like, well, we want Brown and your picks and all that stuff. You know what I mean? That's the kind of move you could see that happen with the Celtics at least.
Yeah. Yeah, they're doing a smart thing.
Yeah, I mean, they should. He will still be just as valuable next year. Obviously, like, it's hurt, but like he'll. And so, like, why get rid of him now when he's actually helping win games at least?
Right. They just have to, if they can slow him down, if they hold him to under 25, I think they win for sure. If he goes over 25, it'll be a game.
I think if he has 30, they can still win. I think if he has like 40, they're screwed.
Fair.
I mean, who else is going to put up a ton of points for them, realistically?
Nobody. Nobody can really create for themselves. I mean, Jeff Green kind of can, but.
I mean, this is like a worse version of the Pacers, essentially, but, you know.
They really went for depth and it didn't really work.
They're not a great organization, Tony. Not the best.
They're really bad at rebounding. Their pitfall is rebounding.
I just mean, as you know, as an organization, they don't quite have it figured out how to get guys.
They have figured out how to get guys. It's give up a first round pick and crappy money that they just signed 6 months ago for it.
Well, yeah, and it hurts when you're
maybe.
It also hurts when you have essentially a dead weight in Jan Mahimi.
That was not a smart move. Yeah. That was their immediate backup plan to Al Horford. Like, what a disaster.
Yeah. Well, good for him, Mahimi. He got paid, and now he's thinking he's going to be great, set for life, essentially.
Oh, he was set for life before that, but
now no, he wasn't making that much money. He had $4 or $5 million. Now he's making 15. I mean,
he probably made $10 million before he signed with
the Wizards. Yeah, but the money.
You could be set for life with $10 million.
Well, okay. I don't get all of it, but like taxes and all that stuff. I mean, I'm not saying he could be set for life, but like now he's like generational wealth.
Well, oh, now he can retire when he's done with basketball and doesn't have to do anything.
Yeah. And his kids are going to be well off. And this is, I mean, where is Jan Mahimi from?
France,
but what? He's before that. His family immigrated to France, if I remember right.
I don't know.
Okay, well, I thought you would know the geography, but I'm just saying, like, come from the background he came from.
Okay.
$70 million.
He was born in France.
He was born in France? I thought he immigrated. I thought his family immigrated.
Born in ruined France.
Okay. Is it Giannis who was that then? Giannis' family immigrated when they were younger?
I have no idea.
This is all
Giannis is Greece, so no.
Greece, I know, but a lot of these NBA players' families, I'm just saying, especially he came from in France, probably, he was not probably super rich, and now he's like, his whole family's going to be set forever, and that's what this contract set him on, which is fantastic for him.
His father was from Benin.
Okay.
We're talking about the wrong things.
No, I mean, I'm just saying, I'm happy to see Jan Mahimi get the kind of money.
Former Pacer great, Jan Mahimi.
No, and I like to see, you know, essentially a guy kind of, it almost like he's sticking it to the Wizards for getting the money. Essentially, it's like, yeah, you overpaid me, but I'm happy to take it. Almost like, screw you, I'm gonna be rich forever. His
career after he went overseas after the Mavs.
Yeah, no, definitely that year that they lost to the Raptors. I mean, he was good.
Oh, you want to go full circle here?
Okay.
Guess who Mahimi was traded to the Pacers for?
Darren Collison, right?
Darren Collison. There you go. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, and now Collison is back playing for the Pacers that are playing better than Jan Mahimi is.
Oh, yeah. That worked out for everybody. Yeah, I'll take a
Pacers. Not for the Wizards. Not for the Wizards. Not for the Wizards.
I'll take Pacers in a close one here.
Yeah, I think so, too.
It's tough. If they weren't on a back-to-back, I want full disclosure, I would be picking the Wizards here.
I worry that it's in Washington's my only problem, but yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you. What are you working on this week? It's a new era of writing for Pacers people.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been kind of dark for a little while. Kind of sad, dark. I don't know. I don't know. I was doing something today, so we'll figure it out. We'll post this
week. All right.
I'll figure it out. I'll figure it out.
Yeah, I haven't really figured out what I'm doing yet either. So we'll see. But thank you all for tuning in.
A depressing way to end this podcast. Well, we'll figure out what we write this week, guys. You can read that later.
I promise it'll be fun and good. Okay, well, I know I'll do something about that Grizzlies game because I'm going to have many takeaways from that. Probably more stuff about Holiday and Sumner, and then move on from there.
Yeah, fair enough.
We need more Sabonis content. Sabonis has been too good for the lack of content he gets. Anyway,
he had a nice run to start the season where everybody talked about him nonstop.
That Grizzlies game was his ninth game at a 48 under 50% shooting. That's insane.
He's a really good NBA player, man.
Insane. So thank you all on that happy, awesome stat note for tuning in to this episode of the Locked On Pacers podcast. We'll be back either tomorrow or Wednesday to chat. Oh, no, I'm sorry. We'll be back tomorrow to talk Wizards and Warriors, and then later in the week to do more game previews and trends. Thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you soon.